The Monologue.
It seems easy to say that I'm shocked at the news that the Seattle City Council put out a budget proposal, their draft proposal, that ends up cutting the Seattle Police Department budget again. I would love to be able to say that that shocks me, given the news that voters overwhelmingly said no to the defund movement in Seattle. But I'm not going to say I'm shocked, because I'm not shocked. I expected this. And we've sort of been talking about this, not just on today's show, but over the course of the last couple weeks. And even before the election, we were saying, no matter the results, it's still going to be bad for at least another year. I said this on Fox Business last week with Stuart Varney. I said, look, there's obviously reason to be pleased with the results. There's no doubt about that. You rejected an abolitionist who wants to not just defund the police, but abolish the police. You rejected, as voters, Nikita Oliver, who was running for council, again, as an abolitionist. You rejected Lorena Gonzalez as mayor, who was a defunder. She supports the defund movement. Well, she's still on the council up until the end of her term. And this council that's already anti-police hasn't changed that much. We had one pickup in the pro-police column with Sarah Nelson on the council. So they just put out their budget proposal, and it shows a whole bunch of cuts, a lot of reallocations. But the most notable comes from the Seattle Police Department budget. They're trying to cut a little over $10 million, almost $11 million more cut from a police department that is already underfunded, understaffed, under-resourced. And some of what they're cutting is just remarkable. For example, they're going to cut community service officers, which is the very same thing they said was important to have. Officers who can go out and be parts of the community, members of the community, making sure that they have a connection with the people who live there. But really, what they were saying was they want social workers to do that, not actual cops. And so they'll cut the community service officers who, by the way, right now and have been for the last several weeks and will for the few weeks coming up, there are a lot of those officers who are now on patrol because of the lack of staffing that we have in Seattle. Understand that. And then the other thing that they're pulling from, hiring incentives. They want to cut the budget of hiring incentives for a department that is desperate to get qualified bodies in uniforms out on the streets patrolling. And when you look at something like that specifically, that's how you defund. That's how you defund. You see, what they're going to say, and this is them being disingenuous, they're going to say, well, no, we still have funding for open positions. But they're taking away the incentives for someone to actually decide, you know what, fine, I've heard all these bad things about Seattle. I know that it's not an easy place to work. The council hates me, but I'm going to do it. This hiring bonus of 25 grand, whatever it happens to be, I'll go ahead and I'll do it. They're saying no to that because they know it's going to be the opposite. It'll be a disincentive for someone to try to work here, which leaves that open position for them to take money from. They'll just do it next year. They very clearly want to decimate this police force. They're not hiding it. They've never hid it, right? They never hid it. They never kept it from people. They wore it on their sleeves. They shouted it from the rooftops because they thought that's what the voters wanted. And now that the voters said they don't want it, they're saying at the council, yeah, oh well, don't really care about you. Haven't you figured that out yet? Haven't you figured that out? You did not realize that? Oh well, here's your wake-up call. We're safe for another 2 years. That's the position of a Dan Strauss or an Andrew Lewis. That's the position of a Lisa Herbold or Teresa Mosqueda. And you know that Lorena Gonzalez on her way out is happy to burn the place down before she leaves, bitter that she left. Gosh, I feel so sorry for that intern who has to get her lunch every day. Already throwing salads around in my head, just throwing salads around because there's sesame seeds in it. She didn't want the sesame seeds. She doesn't like garbanzo beans. Is this a garbanzo bean? Is this an errant garbanzo bean in my salad? Get me a new one. And she throws it at him. So she's really angry that she lost the race for mayor. And so now she's going to take it out on the cops. And really, it means it's taking it out on all of us. Now, this isn't yet a lost cause. If people step up, speak out, put some pressure on some of these council members, maybe you can make some saves. We'll see.
The interview.
Some folks are pretty upset, rightly so, with the 13 Republicans who decided to vote with Democrats on the infrastructure bill. So what does holding them accountable look like? And could it actually backfire? Let's have an honest and open conversation about this with a congressman who's always honest and open with us, Congressman Andy Biggs from Arizona. Welcome back to the show.
Jason, thanks. Good to be with you.
Now, obviously, their vote on this was not ideal. Most Republicans are not a fan of the infrastructure bill, but not everyone on the list of 13 are seen as even necessarily moderate Republicans. Why do you think they made the vote?
It's hard to speculate, but some of them, I am certain that they felt like their district was going to be benefited financially for infrastructure.
Why is that not a valid reason, in your view, to vote for it?
For a number of reasons. Number one, there were three Republican bills that would have done the same thing ultimately. And by the way, they earmarked this stuff up, which Republicans ostensibly don't like, is earmarks. So they earmarked it up. And so that's a problem. But we had three Republican bills as alternatives. The second thing is, this is going to contribute to inflation. I mean, because you have $400 billion that's not covered here. So you're backfilling the highway trust fund by $125 billion, and you're basically, the CEO has said that you have over $250 billion just totally unfunded. So you further devalue the money. So that's a problem. And then you basically, you're only dealing with maybe max 25% of real infrastructure. The rest of it is laying the groundwork for the Green New Deal. You know, everything from electric vehicles, charging stations, electric buses, electric ferry boats, green energy production, mandated regulations on reports on climate change, you know, $500 million to try to cool down pavement in cities. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of reasons not to have voted for this thing, even though, Arizona was slated to get some of that money. I would like Arizona to get some of that money, but you're putting your particularized interest above the overall nation, and that is a huge, huge problem.
Here's the argument coming from Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis, Republican from New York. She voted for the infrastructure bill, and she was on Fox News this week and basically said, look, we just took away the leverage from the squad on the reconciliation spending bill, that now that we voted for this infrastructure, it gives some movement to the moderate Democrats to be free to say, no, we're not going to be a part of this at all. So effectively, she's saying, we did this for the greater good. What's your response to that?
Yeah, that's crazy. My response to that is, if you would have killed the bill, if those 13 stay off the bill, that infrastructure bill gets killed by the six progressives. And what happens is that changes the dynamic. You might have actually killed the bill, the bigger bankruptcy bill that is the next bill coming up. Because they didn't, you would not have satisfied Manchin and Sinema in the Senate. So I realize that she's not been around that long in the Congress, but she gave up our leverage point. Our leverage point was to kill that bill, because without that bill, then the bigger spending package can't really get out of the Senate. And that's the problem with this whole notion of, oh yeah, we're gonna do this. That is an after excuse thought. I mean, mm-hmm. Let's just be honest. She had her social media up as she was making the vote.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, my staff sent me a picture of her standing in front of the Capitol, touting $27 billion going back to New York.
Okay, so you believe she's lying to Fox News, or at least she's coming up with an excuse after the fact.
I think it's her rationale. I don't know whether she's lying or not. I think it's her rationale. I think it's wrong. Her rationale is, oh yeah, we took away that leverage. I disagree. I think what happened is she took away Republicans' leverage, and she basically facilitated. I mean, after all, Jason, everybody from Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, even AOC said those two bills were connected. So They were connected.
Yeah.
And by voting for the one, you basically facilitate the passage of the next.
So we only have about 30 seconds left, but how do you ensure that this kind of infighting, which happens from time to time on both sides, it happens.
Sure.
But how do you ensure that this doesn't get to a point where it continues and continues and continues and then actually makes the midterms a little bit more difficult to win? Because everything right now is on the side of the Republicans. And certainly the Democrats are going through some intense and very serious and real infighting that doesn't seem like it's going to stop. So what can be done in that regard?
I think that our leadership has to take swift steps to hold folks accountable. So if you are the senior Republican on a committee, I think people are questioning why would you be rewarded with being the senior member on that committee or subcommittee when you just basically fed us to the lions and took away our leverage and our hopes of stopping the whole plan. So I think it needs swift, sure, clear accountability.
Congressman Andy Biggs of Arizona, thank you so much, as always, for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
You bet, Jason. Take care.
Now this.
The Monologue.
Fresh off their wins in Virginia, and I mean wins in the literal sense. They didn't just win the governor's mansion. Parents exploded, in the words of Mediaite.com's Jackson Richmond, at school board officials out in Loudoun County, Virginia, where really it's become the main stomping ground for folks on the left to pretend that CRT doesn't exist and for folks on the right to acknowledge that not only does it exist, but it's actually hurting the students that are listening to this nonsense. Now, and on top of that, of course, they're dealing with more than just critical race theory. On the one hand, they're dealing with the normal stuff that you would deal with in a school district of that side. But on the other hand, they're dealing with a cover-up, or what at least seems like a cover-up, of a sexual assault in a girl's bathroom by a biological boy wearing a dress. Now, I'm not going to dive into the controversy itself because the parents there are actually doing what parents are supposed to do, which is pay close attention to what's going on in the schools and then speak up. Speak up loudly, organize if they need to, and then make a move to change things. Now, at some of these meetings, things have gotten pretty raucous, and I understand that. Things will get emotional when talking about your kids. And yesterday, there was a little bit of a roller coaster of emotions. Some people yelled a little bit or raised their voice. Others quite calmly said exactly what they think about this school district, whether it's the school board or their superintendent. His name is Scott Ziegler. And their intent, these parents, because they organized, because they did what a lot of folks on the left have done mostly because we have ceded this kind of power to them, they're recalling these folks. Judge just gave the green light or the thumbs up. Said, yeah, you can go ahead with your recall against the remaining folks on this school board. Because remember, not all of them are still there.
This board is overseeing the worst example of education leadership in the history of this country. That is not hyperbole.
You have lost the trust of this county, all of you, especially you, Ziegler. And you've been the laughingstock of the country when it comes to school boards. I told you this wasn't about an election. And we're still here. I said we'd see you in court as of 3:30 today. We are now in court. Thank you.
They might not win every single one of these recall elections. Maybe they win one, maybe they win half of them, whatever it is. Every single one of them now knows what it feels like to be more involved, and not just the work that it takes, which it does take a lot, but the feeling you get when you've accomplished something on behalf of something bigger than yourself. And obviously for parents, kids are bigger than themselves. That's how they view it, rightly so. They decided a wrong had been committed. They tried to make it right. They were ignored by the politicians who are on the school board. And so they said, okay, well then you forced us to go one step further. And they did something that inspired a whole bunch of people like you who are listening. Maybe you're living in the Puyallup School District or North Shore District, and you see what's going on there and how far to the left your schools have become. And I've seen some of the videos of parents speaking to school boards, and you've spoken up and you've said things. And in some cases, maybe you've seen some victories. In other cases, maybe you were ignored, like the school board members ignored the public in Loudoun School District. Well, now you know what you can do next, if you so choose. Again, it takes work. It takes a lot of extra work to really be committed and do a recall. But not only are you capable of doing it, but you might actually win. And I hope you're looking at all of these situations around the country, not even just in Loudoun County, and seeing you have so much more power than you've ever realized. And only now are people waking up to that fact. And that makes me feel great.
The interview.
Look, we know the Build Back Better plan is a nightmare, one that's happening at a time we're already dealing with inflation. So what can Republicans do to push back? Joining me on the line is our friend, Congressman Ralph Norman, Republican from South Carolina. Welcome back to the show.
Well, my pleasure, Jason. Thank you.
So Build Back Better is not going to build anything back better. It's going to probably do the opposite of that. It'll probably cost even more than we've allocated, and we'll be paying for this for a very long time. What can Republicans do to push back against some of the projects in here that are, in fact, popular and would have been popular had they voted for the Republican bill?
Well, first of all, Jason, they should have, everybody should have had time to read a 2,500-page bill. And secondly, you know, the way the Democrats, this is their bill. It didn't help any that Republicans, 13 Republicans, helped pass the so-called infrastructure bill Friday in the dead of night.
Mm-hmm.
But that is, be as it is, this bill is awful. It's money we don't have. It's bankrupting the country. Last time I heard, when Pete Buttigieg got back from his maternity leave, he mentioned about the road. He's going to work on the racist roads. And I'm sure the money that will go, you know, that is plowed into the bill that nobody knows about, will go for putting new roads in that were so-called replacing so-called racist roads. The whole thing's a sham. And what we can do is blast out what's in the bill. And what we can do is not pass anything else that that the Democrats are doing on their own that is an atrocity to this country. And it you know, it's any of it is bad. I mean, including the IRS agents that are $80 billion they're hiring that mm-hmm. are over 80,000. I mean, it's just it's ridiculous. It really is.
Well, I mean, and that part makes sense because we've been talking about it. In fact, on the show this today, we've been talking about the fact that the IRS is going after people who owe taxes. In some cases, because of COVID, they got screwed because we closed down the economy. You hire a bunch of these agents because you know you have to pay for all of the trillions of dollars that you're going to end up spending over the course of the next, you know, 3 years, whatever's left of the Biden administration. And that's who's going to suffer. The people who have already been suffering, and to be clear, there's some people who didn't pay their taxes, and that's on them. But in many cases, it is due to policies around COVID that the Democrats put in place.
Yeah, and they want to keep COVID going. I mean, just like they want to keep the January 6th commission going. They want to keep the spotlight off the horrendous policies that this administration in 9 months has put on the American people. I mean, look at the inflation. Look at what we're paying for gas now, which is at a seven-year high. Look at what we're paying for groceries. Look at what we're going to pay for heating oil. Look, the 445,000 or 450,000 they want to pay illegals. I mean, somebody pick me anything that is sane on this bill, and I can't find it. And no Republican, as they shouldn't have previously on the infrastructure bill, no Republican ought to vote for this. But what I don't want to see happen is a so-called reaching across the aisle and settling for, you know, a 1.5 or 2.5 trillion. I mean, that's just Pelosi's way of cutting the length of time on the programs that she's embedding in this country. Yeah. It's going to be hard to get out.
Yeah, and anyone will tell you, whenever you institute any program, any policy, any toll road, you're never getting out of it. That will be there forever.
No, you're pregnant with it, and you're married to it. And it's just the good news that I would say to your listeners. Look what happened in Virginia. You had a state that's traditionally blue. You had a state that had a lot of employees that worked in Washington, D.C., that are dependent on government. They rejected it. And the Democrats still don't get it. I mean, they're tone deaf to what the American people are saying to them. And that's the bright light, because once Virginia woke up, not just to the governorship, but to the lieutenant governorship, which was a real, the press will never say it, but I mean, what a milestone for African Americans.
Yeah, absolutely. I know the media doesn't want to say it. In fact, the media is just pretending that was an example of white supremacy in action, which of course, as we both know, is a ludicrous position for them to take. We've been talking with Congressman Ralph Norman, Republican from our friends over. I was going to say almost your neighbors, but you're not really in South Carolina. You're not necessarily our neighbors, but you're kind of our neighbors in the South. There you go. Congressman, thank you so much for stopping by.
My pleasure. Thank you a lot, Jason.
Absolutely. Bye. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Now this.
The Jason Rant Show.
Always glad to see Seattle radio host Jason Rance.
It's always a pleasure to watch you and a pleasure now to host you.
Jason, I just love your coverage of what's been going on in Seattle.
Jason, this is as bad as it gets in America.
Jason Rance, great to see you. Thank you.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
He's running in Congress to unseat the incumbent Republican, Jamie Herrera Butler, and things are looking good for him, not so much for the incumbent. Joining me on the line is Joe Kent. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
So, new Trafalgar poll is out, and it's been pretty consistent in the polling for you. You are very much ahead of Jamie Herrera Butler, the incumbent Republican congresswoman. What do you think is behind that big jump?
Well, you know, honestly, I'd love to say it's 100% due to my effort. Me and my team have put in a lot of work, you know, trying to get out to every part of the district and talk to as many people as we possibly can. But I also think what's really helping us is just how radical the far left is right now, between Inslee's vaccine mandates and mask mandates and everything that Biden is doing, the full scope of the condition our economy's in. I think that people are very much ready for a change. They realize that this is a fight that's going to affect absolutely every aspect of their lives. And so I really think our message is resonating right now, and that's clear by the polling.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that the leftward drift or leap or however we want to call it to socialism and far, far, far fringe left outfield kinds of ideas has hurt the Democratic Party. I imagine if you were Jamie Herrera Butler, why would she not say, hey, I'm the moderate Republican? Why would that message, you think, not work in your district?
You know, I think we've just seen that these moderate Republicans, the so-called moderate Republicans, they just refuse to fight every time that it's critical. And right now, when we have these vaccine mandates being pushed by Joe Biden, they're unconstitutional, they're immoral. Inslee likes to go, you know, all in and even double down on these things, even ahead of Joe Biden sometimes. And Jamie Herrera Butler has said absolutely nothing. And I think it's evident by looking at her FEC report. She takes money from Johnson & Johnson. She takes money from Big Pharma. So she won't go after these special interest groups, and she won't fight when it's key. I mean, that's very clear that she's never made a hard stand against anything until it was time to vote for the unconstitutional impeachment of President Trump.
And what should be alarming to everyone, I mentioned this earlier on the show, you know, you have a ruling coming from a federal judge putting a pause to the new OSHA standards. Suddenly OSHA is now getting involved in policing vaccines, vaccine mandates for businesses. And the administration is basically saying, no, you guys should continue to do it, businesses. We want you to continue to do what it is you were going to do under our ruling, which in a lot of ways is similar to when the Supreme Court said no on the eviction moratorium and the administration just moved forward anyway. This should be alarming to anyone, even if someone supports a vaccine mandate.
Yeah, absolutely. And where are our lawmakers? There's some that are sounding off about this. But right now, I think we need very clear legislation coming from our lawmakers that say these vaccine mandates are unconstitutional and we will stand in the way. Now, I do realize there's a states' rights issue there and the governors could maneuver around that. But we need to hear from our elected officials. What else are we paying them for, if not to fight on our behalf?
And Joe, is that basically your position here? That yes, we know that you're against vaccine mandates. I share that view. But in this case, if the governor did it here, you wouldn't necessarily say that on its face it's illegal. It might be unconstitutional. We can set that aside. Your issue here is that the federal government should be dictating this on behalf of states.
Yeah, the federal government and the states, I mean, I think it's immoral and illegal on both sides, the federal government or the state government doing it. And we should be hearing from our elected officials. I want to hear from every member of Congress right now where they stand on this, because I think it's not a time to fence sit or try and play nice with both sides like Jamie Herrera Butler likes to do, like a lot of these Republicans like to do. It's time to fight for our people.
Well, especially given the context of the next fight, and I think it's pretty clear that we're headed towards mandating it for kids as a condition of public school admittance. And arguably in the state level, because we already saw this happen with the private schools, Inslee might just mandate it there as well. Whether it's coming from Inslee or from Biden, that's very clearly going to be the next fight. And I don't hear anyone really talking about it.
No, I'm really disappointed that we're not hearing more from our elected officials. I mean, Inslee was retweeting the CDC's announcement, I think, within like an hour of them announcing it. So he's obviously very eager. I agree with you. I think Inslee's going to mandate this for our children as soon as he possibly can. And so, again, we need to have elected officials that aren't just going to go along to get along, that are going to actually present legislation to fight back against this and actually fight for our kids. Because however you feel about the vaccine, we should not be mandating it for anybody, especially giving it to 5-year-olds through 11-year-olds. That's just completely absurd.
Joe Kent is running for Congress in Washington's 2nd District, or 3rd District, excuse me. He's running up against Jamie Herrera Butler, who's the incumbent. Good polling for him in the latest Trafalgar poll. His website, by the way, joekentforcongress.com. It's all spelled out. At the same time, just moving on from that particular issue, we very clearly have an inflation problem, a supply chain problem, gas prices going up, heating bills will be much higher this winter than last winter and the winter before that. And it seems, again, like we're just being told it's not actually happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the most blatant lie ever, because everybody goes to the pump, everybody sees the inflation at the grocery store and in every aspect of our lives. So they're really, they're doing, you know, one of two things. They're either treating us like we're stupid and we can't see it, or they're just saying we have to tolerate this and we can't dissent from what the current administration or regime, however you want to look at it, is putting out. But what I think we're seeing right now is that the globalization of shipping all of our manufacturing lines overseas, that experiment has absolutely failed. Not only has it hollowed out the American economy with what it's done to the ability for someone to leave high school and get a decent paying job, it's also made us extremely vulnerable. We're letting the Chinese Communist Party dictate the supplies that we get. And then also the natural resources industry. Joe Biden came in, first thing he did was kill off the Keystone XL pipeline. We saw an immediate cause and effect there. Not only did he kill off thousands of jobs, but now all the prices are up. And we were at a point where we were not just energy independent, but we were a net producer of energy. So we need to get back to these America First policies of actually building what we need for our economy here locally, and then harvesting our natural resources to support our economy and our people.
When it feels like folks on the left really hate to embrace an America First ideal, or at least the ones who are in power right now in the activist community, because they just don't like this country. I mean, even not that we go to Jimmy Kimmel for any sort of political insight, but last night, for example, he said the reason why Kamala Harris's polls are so low as vice president has nothing to do with the fact that she actually doesn't do anything and is really robotic and completely fake, but because this country is sexist and racist, and the left truly believes that, the activists on the left truly believe that about this country.
Yeah, I think they believe that because they have such a dominance in the media market that they can just continue to pump this message out that people blatantly know is wrong. Look, Kamala Harris wasn't popular within her own party when she ran for president. So I don't think people are buying this. I think what happened on last Tuesday, in Virginia and New Jersey, and then also in Seattle, right? I think that really reflects the American people. They've had enough of this. Even folks, I think, that voted Democrat for a wide variety of reasons in 2020, they didn't vote for this right now. And Jimmy Kimmel can talk all night. All these talking heads can talk all day. But people aren't buying it. I think the country is changing.
It is changing, and hopefully it changes for the better come this midterm election. Obviously, you're hoping to be a part of the big red wave that a lot of people right now anticipate. Do you think anything can happen realistically between now and next November that will dramatically shift sort of the prevailing thinking that Republicans are going to do well? Because let's be honest, a year is a long time.
It's a long time. The trajectory that the Biden administration's on, they don't appear to be trying to course correct whatsoever. Their job, or their goal right now, seems to be to double, triple down, and then just hope the media runs enough coverage for them and they can continue to, you know, to bring out these old talking points that were all somehow racist and sexist. And I really think people are sick and tired of those talking points. They're sick and tired of being talked down to, and they want to see results. So, I mean, I guess anything's possible. Could the Democrats turn this around somehow? Maybe, but I just don't see any plan. I don't see it heading in that trajectory, which says it's very bad for the country if we have to endure, and we're only 10 months into this, but if we have to endure another year of this, I mean, it's going to be catastrophic for the nation. So I pray for our country, but I think if things continue to go in this direction, we are going to have a sweeping America First red wave.
Yeah, look, I want that to happen. I just hope it doesn't have to get much worse before we actually get to that point. And that's
exactly
the problem you point out there. It's just a lot of people are going to hurt. A lot of people are going to suffer just in the course of the next couple months going into the new year. And it's a shame, and it's all preventable. All of this is completely preventable.
Right.
Joe Kent is running for Congress. The website, joekentforcongress.com. Quickly, we got about 30 seconds.
No, absolutely. Like you said, this is all man-made. This was all done by the Biden administration, and we can turn it around. We have the ability to do that in this country, bringing back American manufacturing, the Buy American, Hire American. We bring back those policies, we can put our country first. We just have to hire the right leaders, and we can't count on the establishment to do that for us anymore.
Well, Joe Kent says he's not one of the establishment, and he is the kind of leader who could bring this country back. JoeKentForCongress.com. Thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Of course. Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz, Seattle radio host, joins us now.
Jason, you're the perfect guest on this.
Jason Rantz, welcome back, Jason.
I see you often on other programs here.
Jason, what's going on?
Jason, thanks for coming on.
The Quick Hit.
You know, we were just having this conversation with Joe Kent about the future of this country. And of course, when we talk about the future of the country, we are also especially talking about the future of the communities that we live in, whether you live in Battleground or Silverdale, whether you live in Bellevue or, you know, Kingston, you're in a position where you're looking around and you're saying, I don't want to see any more suffering as a result of some really, really bad policies coming out of the Inslee administration or the Biden administration or whatever your local city council is up to. We all take the position that says we need to course correct, and it has to feel really puzzling for a lot of folks. Let's say you're listening right now in Buckley, and you look around in some other cities. You look at Seattle, for example, and you see, oh my gosh, things are bad there. But then you feel really pumped up, even though you don't live in Seattle, that the council just decided to go with at least one pro-business, pro-police candidate, that the city attorney is now going to be the moderate Republican who's actually going to prosecute misdemeanor crimes. But then you see the news that we cover on this show about how, yeah, we're not actually course correcting yet. The voters are trying to, desperately. They're desperately trying to course correct. And yet the people who are still in power and who aren't up for re-election until 2023, they're there saying, yeah, we're going to continue to go down this road that we're going down. You see what's going on just nationally from the left-wing media and the response to what happened in Virginia. These analysts have the audacity to come out and claim that it's all about white supremacy. That's what won. White supremacy won in Virginia. There's no such thing as critical race theory. None of that actually exists. It's, of course, a ridiculous notion, the same way it was ridiculous when they claimed Antifa didn't exist. They are in absolute denial. And part of me wonders, and I honestly don't know the answer to this. It depends on the person, certainly, but the one who says it, that this is all about white supremacy, that this country was founded in systems of oppression that have not gone away and we need to dismantle the whole system, blah, 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 all those people. Sometimes I can't tell if they say that because they believe that, like any good propaganda, if you say it enough and it gets accepted by mainstream media outlets and they start to amplify that message, that the population will start to believe it. I don't know if they think of this as a strategy to try to get people on their side, or if they've truly convinced themselves that this is true. I honestly don't know the answer to that. There's certainly some people who I truly believe are scam artists who think that this is going to wind people up and deliver them power. I look at Nancy Pelosi, for example. Yeah, there's no doubt that she's a hardcore leftist, but I don't think she believes the garbage coming out of the mouths of the squad. She's just willing to give in and parrot that stuff because it might give her more power. That's what she wants at the end of the day. Because then with that power, she believes she can use it in ways to, in her view, better society, even though her way has so far yielded nothing but misery. But then there's also people who I think we can all acknowledge are true believers. They are true believers. They might also be all about their own brand and about collecting more power. But when you look at someone like Bernie Sanders, for example, he's a true believer. Cori Bush is a true believer. She's a hypocrite. She wants to defund the police while hiring private security for herself because she believes she is worthy of it and you are not. She's an elitist, but she's a true believer. There's someone like Jimmy Kimmel who I kind of don't even understand. Jimmy Kimmel, of course, we just mentioned it. We'll play the audio now. I just mentioned it with Joe. He comes out there and says the reason why the vice president is so unpopular is because we're all sexist and racist.
If anything can get the American people fired up, it's infrastructure. So, and Biden is alone. Americans really aren't happy with his vice president, Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris has an approval rating of 28%, which is makes no sense because she basically has nothing to do. I mean, it's like criticizing a backup quarterback.
Just real quickly, maybe that's why people don't like her, is that she's not doing anything despite being put on the job of helping at the border, which, by the way, people like Jimmy Kimmel pretended wasn't a crisis and still isn't a crisis. Is that possibly why she might be just a little bit unpopular? Just a tad?
Tom Brady's okay. I don't love the way Blaine Gabbert has his legs folded on the bench. I have to be honest. Kamala's approval rating of 28% is even lower than the 30% who approved of Dick Cheney in 2008 after he shot a guy in the face. I think these people are forgetting that at least 10% of those polled approved of Dick Cheney because he shot a guy in the face. I think I know why Kamala's ratings are low, besides sexism and racism, which are the obvious ones.
Oh, it's the obvious ones, of course. Those are the obvious ones. All those racist Republicans, racist Americans, and oh my God, you go into a state like Virginia, white supremacy reigns supreme. I mean, obviously, we ignore the whole Winsome Sears part. Push that aside for a moment. But, you know, other than that black woman who apparently the white supremacists liked. This is a racist country. This is a white supremacy country. Kyle Rittenhouse is a white supremacist. I mean, he didn't actually kill anyone other than two white people who tried to kill him. But other than that, I mean, obviously, he's a white supremacist. These people, they're delusional, or folks like him play into a worldview he thinks will deliver him ratings. And you know what? At the end of the day, it doesn't quite matter why he holds a position that he holds. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, he's still saying the same thing, and it's still awful, and it's still dangerous, and it's still tearing people apart, and they do it anyway, all in the same breath while still complaining that Trump was divisive.
The Last Rants.
And with that, I just tell you to be authentic in whatever it is you believe. And we've had conversations on the show in the past about it's okay if you as a Republican don't believe in everything that all Republicans push. It's okay to not support Donald Trump as much as someone else. That's okay. You need to be authentic. Because at the end of the day, people truly want to become united. And there are too many people who view things just purely through an ideological lens, like the Democrats do, but they do it on our side, and they end up tearing people apart when they don't need to. Moving forward for the next year, as I said with Joe Kent, we will be tested in significant ways. A year is a long time politically. And all the infighting that you see right now on the left between the progressive base and the more moderate Democrats, that's very real. And there's going to be smart people within that movement who say, hey, guys, we've got a midterm coming along. We cannot do this kind of infighting. And they'll try to get the cooler heads to prevail. At the same time, you're going to start to see more conversations about infighting within the Republican Party. We talked about it with Congressman Andy Biggs. And while I think it's all completely fair to call out any member of Congress of your own party that takes a vote with the Democrats in a way that does a disservice to this country and to the party, there's going to be folks who will try to exploit that and make it about infighting within the Republican Party, create the infighting, and then pretend that all the Democrat stuff is free and clear. Now, that could go to our benefit if it's truly seen as fake infighting and it's not actual infighting, whereas we know that there's literal infighting going on the left. But it could also hurt, because it can push some voters who are independents to say, you know what, I'm going to give this other Democrat who before maybe I was going to say, no, maybe it's time for a change. I'll give him one more shot because I don't necessarily want to be a part of all this infighting. I saw it within the crazy left. My Democratic congressperson is more moderate, perceived to be at least. I'll go in that direction. The electorate is kind of weird that way. And there's going to be a lot of efforts to get the infighting going and try to create controversy where none exists. So just make sure that you're not a part of that. And you won't be a part of that if you understand that sometimes people will disagree on stuff, but we all want to come together and find a common cause, a common good for all of us, regardless of politics. And sometimes that means you go against what you think your party wants you to do, but it might be the right choice for you, your family, and your community. Oftentimes, other times, that's not the case, that it is something important to go with the party on because we happen to be on the right side of an issue. Just do what you think is right for you and your community, and I'm hopeful if you do it all in good faith, we'll all come in this together. Get in this together, and we'll come out really stronger. On the issues, we win. And that's why I'm comfortable with someone saying, you know what, maybe on this one issue, I'm not with you. That's okay. It's okay. And that's the last rants. But delivered in not a way that was very ranty.